Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Well, welcome to another episode of Footnotes. Thanks for joining us. We hope that you're having a grand old day. Today we are joined with myself, Logan Daly, Paul Patterson.
Yo.
And Rob Croyle.
Good to see you.
And we're all super energetic today.
There's a lot of energy in this office. We're just effervescent, practically. That took all of my energy just to say that word, so I'll be done for the rest of the podcast here.
Rob's moving.
Yes.
And I'm Rob's still moving.
Paul's recovering.
Yeah.
And Logan, we don't even know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
All right. But anyway.
Spitting a lot of syllables with effervescent.
Spitting a lot of syllables. Yeah. Sequential syllables? I don't even know. It's going to be good, but we're talking, this is the third Sunday of our Advent series, so we're talking joy this week.
And we have pointed out that we pre-record these.
Yeah, we've pointed this out, okay. So, but we're going to pretend that we're in the future, so this
okay.
is, because this
I'm
comes out
recovering?
After. Huh?
What if I'm not recovering by then?
That's a good point.
Okay.
That, it's wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey.
Okay.
Is what we decided.
I got that reference.
It's good. You made that reference the first time, I think.
Oh, did I?
You might have, or maybe I did. I can't remember.
Cool.
But regardless, that is, people are aware that we record these pre, but they come out after, so it's kind of a weird sort of...
Honestly, that all the media we watch, that's how it works.
Before and after.
Other than live news coverage.
Yeah. You can pretend, though.
Yeah.
Live streams.
Live streams, true.
We okay. could start live streaming footnotes.
All right.
That sounds dangerous.
We're getting wordy, so...
What?
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, so yeah, it's third Sunday of Advent. We're talking about joy, and so we talked about that on Sunday, and now you're listening to this, and we're going to dig into a couple of the things that we couldn't fit into the sermon. So, Paul, what do we want to talk about first?
So, as I was studying for this and reading Luke 1, when you look at Luke 1, it's a long chapter, and... we could almost just read this entire chapter and call it a sermon. So, obviously we can't read the whole thing. However, so the part that we decided to skip was the birth, well, we skipped pretty much the first two-thirds of the book. But one thing that was really standing out to me that I just love talking about is the story of the birth of John the Baptist. Because the writer, Luke, includes so many details about John and the birth narrative, that if you were a first century Christian, a Jewish follower of Christ, you would like just all these things would be flying at you. And we're just going to point a few out, and I'm sure there's even more. And so when we look at just the beginning of the birth narrative, verse 5, in the days of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah of the division of Abijah. And he had a wife from the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking blamelessly in the commands and statutes of the Lord, but they had no children because Elizabeth was barren, and both were advanced in years. So what story does that remind you of? Who do these two people remind you of?
Oh, that sounds like Abraham.
And?
Samuel?
Well, no, but no. He was Abraham's wife.
Oh, Abraham's wife, Sarah.
Sarah, yeah.
Okay.
And so this is like the first, like this is intentional that Luke is including this detail into the story.
Sure.
He's trying to set a narrative about when God starts working amongst people and starting a movement. Another really big detail here is the birth of Samson. Not just the birth of Samson, but also the person of Samson. But the most obvious connection, verse 15, talking about John the Baptist, he will be great before the Lord, and he must not drink wine or strong drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even from his mother's womb. Now, I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that Samson's the only other person that has this type of vow.
A Nazarite vow from birth.
Can you think of any?
I can.
I can, yeah.
I think you got that one.
So now we have Samson being included in this story. Now, if you're familiar with the story of Samson, good story, bad story?
A great story of a guy screwing up repeatedly.
And were his parents always thrilled with him?
Not overly.
No. Judges 14, Samson demands this Philistine woman because he saw her and he thought she looked pretty.
Didn't his parents say, that's a bad idea?
Yep.
Don't do that.
Yep. And they still let him.
Well, you know, as good parents do, they give their children everything they want.
Sure.
Yep. Yeah.
And even just like projecting to the future of from this story moving on, like think of the character, the persona of John the Baptist, and like picture how you see Samson, and I think you can see some similarities even with that. Cool. So just shooting from the hip here, I think one of the things Luke is trying to do is he's trying to redeem the story of Samson. This is going to be a man who honestly lives for the kingdom of God and sure. will lay down his life, not in a selfish way, but lay down his life in a selfless way for the coming of this king. There's also some similarities to Samuel, the birth of Samuel. His mom was going to the temple praying continually that she would have a son and said that if God would give her a son, then she would dedicate him to the service of the Lord.
Was she older when she was doing that?
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
I don't remember for sure, but I kind of remember that she was, but...
Yeah.
Don't know for sure.
Anyway, so these details are not insignificant. Like, the writer does this on purpose. I saw a bumper sticker driving on my way here that says, love trumps hate. 5 years ago, that had a completely different meaning. But because of today's political environment, we know that that's a mixed message. Not a mixed message, but it's a politically rich message.
Has a double meaning.
Yeah,
there's definitely a little double meaning going on there.
And Luke, by the way, is going to do this. He's actually including so many political details in the story on purpose. How does the story start in the days of Herod, king of Judea? Like, he's letting you know, he's setting the political context. And then there's these two birth prophecies about a man who's going to prepare the way of the Lord their God. And then the prophecy of Mary's birth, and that his kingdom will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom there will be no end. And this last Sunday, the last verse we looked at was chapter 2, verse 1. And in those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And like, there, it's pancaked in between these two political statements. And we know what's going on. We know who the king of Judea is. We know who the emperor at the time is, Caesar Augustus. And we know that Quirinius was the governor of Syria. And we also have the mention that a census is happening. And for us, a census today is, as we said, pretty peaceful, maybe a bit of a time annoyance. But a census for them was, as we mentioned, oppressive, to say the least, especially if you're Israel. So that was a little tangent from what we were planning on talking about, but all that to say, like, the details matter.
Sure.
And when you read something or hear something that you think you've heard before, you have to ask the question why. That's all I gotta say about that.
You know, I find it interesting, you know, that Elizabeth in verse 25 says, "That's the Lord has done for me in the days when He looked on me to take away my reproach among the people." And as you were comparing Elizabeth to Sarah, and here Elizabeth is in the exact same position that Sarah was, and yet culturally there's a reproach.
Yeah.
Culturally, there's this thought that maybe you've done something wrong, maybe God, maybe you've lost God's favor, maybe there's sin in your life. And I find that interesting, that how often do we find ourselves in a situation and you know, or how often do we look at people in a certain circumstance and wonder, you know,
what did they do to bring this on themselves?
What did they do? Yeah, and well, maybe...
What'd you do?
Maybe God's about ready to do something pretty cool in their life. And maybe we should be a part of the solution or part of the miracle instead of part of the finger pointing. But anyway,
Ron.
Like if your house hasn't sold and you were expecting to own a house before Christmas so you could celebrate with your family, and you're like, why God, are you doing this to me? And where are you? And why aren't you answering my prayers? And like something like that.
Well, let's not get that transparent.
And some of us are just sitting there thinking, what the Croyles do? Oh, man.
But interesting that you said that, because if you're a Jew, who's your first patriarch?
Abraham.
And God tells Abraham they're going to have a kid. And at first he believes it. Like, great job. And God tells him again, and God tells him again. During the third time. So the third time, there's a lady hanging out in the tent. And it's Sarah. And she laughs.
Yep.
And God's like, why didn't you laugh? And she's like, I didn't laugh. And he's like, okay, but you did. Like, I love that little detail here. Like, it flips it. Like, who's the one not believing? It's Zechariah now. Elizabeth is the one that believes. That's just another detail about the birth of John that that you reminded me of. Good stuff. I had something else, but I just totally... Obviously, there's the direct reference to the power of Elijah. Like, you should pay attention to that. I also wonder... I can't prove that, but yeah. All right, and then one last thing we wanted to touch on, unless there's any more further comments.
Nothing fun in the peanut gallery over here.
Okay. No, peanut gallery over here is good too.
It's Psalm 105. It's not a short psalm by any means, but it's 45 verses.
And good size, a nice medium length.
Sure. And, you know, we already have a good chunk of passage that we have to cover. But one of the reasons we wanted to spend a little bit more time on this is as you read through the psalm, it starts, you know, praising God, giving glory to his name, and then it starts with the person of Abraham. And it starts kind of moving through the story of Israel a little bit, reminding them about the covenant he made with Abraham, how he swore to Isaac, how he confirmed it to Jacob. And so it's like reminding them about, you know, where they started. And then he said, verse 12, when they were few in number, of little account, and sojourners in it, wandering from nation to nation, from one kingdom to another, he allowed no one to oppress them. He rebuked kings on their account, saying, touch not my anointed ones, do my prophets no harm. Like, okay, cool. Like, God have their back. He let nothing happen to him. Verse 16, when he summoned a famine on the land and broke all supply of bread, he had sent a man ahead of them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. His feet were hurt with fetters. His neck was put in a collar of iron. And then until what he had said came to pass, the word of the Lord tested him. The king sent and released him. The ruler of the people set him free. He made him lord of his house and ruler of all his possessions, to bind his princes at his pleasure and to teach his elders wisdom. Like, yeah, it's sounding good. Then Israel came to Egypt. Jacob sojourned in the land of Ham. The Lord made his people very fruitful and made them stronger than their foes. And then verse 25. He turned their hearts to hate his people, to deal craftily with his servants. And there's this like flip in the story right in the middle of it, of how like God allowed them to be slaves and to suffer. And then it builds up again from that. Actually, but there's a chiasm in this.
Oh, for sure.
Anyway.
Like, you can kind of see the form of it as you're just reading it and
yeah.
getting the feel and the vibe of it.
Yeah.
It's in there.
Well, and then it starts with Moses and it builds up until the passage, the final few verses.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, I don't know, it was an interesting verse I wanted to point out, like, how God allowed his people to go through hard times. And I know for me, like, the hard times I go through helps. Even going back to what you were saying about Elizabeth and, you know, Sarah and the shame, when you go through that shame, you have so much more mercy for others. My wife and I did not struggle to have kids, but I remember my wife being worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now my wife and I know people who are struggling to have kids and our hearts break for them. And talking to them, they feel they still have that shame. Like something's wrong with me. It's not working. The thing I want, I'm not having.
Mm-hmm.
And, I see my friends having kids left and right. I want a child. And so in our culture, it's almost taboo to have kids now, but those that want to have kids, they still feel that shame.
Sure.
And I know couples who have been trying for years and never told anyone. Like, they just bore that on themselves because they didn't want to share it.
Uh-huh.
And that comes from a place of shame.
I remember for Christy and I, our first Christmas, and we were not making a lot of money. In fact, month to month, I could not tell you how we were going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Like on paper, our income and our outgo, they didn't match. And they didn't match in significant ways, and yet God provided for us. And I remember the church just come alongside us during that Christmas, and they blessed us with some gifts. And the next year, we were in a very different financial situation. And so I wanted, like you were talking about, just like that, how we see those experiences of others when we've been through it ourselves, like we're more attuned. So we had opportunity to go to the pastor and say, hey, is there a family that we could help? And there was a family that the father was fighting cancer and actually eventually do really well. We bought some gifts, but then we gave him some cash, and it was a really strange number. It wasn't like $120. It's like $108.32, or I don't know what it was, but like it was whatever was left over. Like we had budgeted so much, and this was left over, and so we gave that too, and it happened to cover a bill exactly.
Yeah.
And to just be part of a miracle after being on the other end of the miracle the year prior, to be part of, you know, that miracle a year later was pretty cool.
Now, my wife and I have been in similar situations, and I don't know. My pushback Paul comes into play, and I also think about the people who pray year after year, generation after generation for a miracle, and they don't see it.
Mm.
And I often wonder if it's because God was trying to provide it through someone else and through other people, and they just chose not to for whatever reason.
Mm.
Yeah, along those lines, I think about Israel and how many years did they pray to be brought back into the promised land? Almost 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And generation after generation, it was just, and I've read the prayers that they prayed for 1,900 plus years, and it's amazing to me that they were that faithful to that prayer after all that time.
Yeah. It also reminds me during that time, like when they're in Babylon, Jeremiah tells them to set up, buy homes, get jobs, work hard, and be a blessing to your captors, which was just like, I don't know, just, it makes me think about the duality a little bit of what we're talking about with joy, like the suffering, but you choose to be joy, and you do that because when you focus so much on your suffering and you allow that to be only your story, how could you ever be a blessing to those that are your captors?
Sure.
And I'm kind of cool with ending it right there.
Yeah, I think that's that sounds like a wrap to me.
Cool. I'll keep studying.
Yeah, keep digging into it. It's been good stuff.
You can Google this stuff. I mean,
yeah, we're not geniuses. No. I mean, you've met us. We're not geniuses.
We're not geniuses.
But we're glad that you could join us, and we hope you have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.
Ciao.
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 You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.